It's time for another episode of the Cultural Hall. It's episode 87, wherein we talk about rape recovery. That's the second and third block. So let's keep this first part really happy, and then and then the second and third block. No, it's a very great discussion that we have. It's been one that I've wanted to do an episode of the Cultural Hall about for a long time, and it does get, I don't want to say adult, but I mean, there's nothing childish about rape, so.
Right.
I mean, everyone take what you will from it, but it's
maybe
a great
episode.
Maybe not
one to listen to with the kids.
You know, I quite honestly, I think that if I had a 16-year-old daughter, I think that I would listen to it with my 16-year-old daughter.
Maybe
if
not
I had
a 6-year-old daughter.
Yeah, I don't think I would be listening to it with my 6-year-old daughter. 12-year-old okay. daughter, probably not.
So clear them out of the room.
But, you know, your teenager and on. We don't get graphic by any means, but we certainly hit it pretty straightforward.
So you're speaking with someone who has gone through the recovery process.
It's through the Rape Recovery Center here in Salt Lake.
Okay.
And she's a member of the church. We dive into it. We even talk about why, you know, maybe there's more instances or seemingly more instances within the LDS church. So that's the second and third block here of the Cultural Hall. I'm excited because I'm recommitting myself. It's like New Year's Eve, and I have New Year's resolutions to commit myself here to the Cultural Hall. I don't want to say that I've let it lack, but there have been some weeks where, you know, where there've been not an episode posted on Friday.
Well, there's only so much Richie to go around, so.
Well, and the thing that frustrates me is that they were just like dumb things as to why I didn't get posted. You know, like I didn't have an intro, so I had to wait for an intro, or I didn't have a graphic, so I had to wait for a graphic. Just dumb stuff like that, because the actual interviews themselves have been done for a little while.
Right.
Coming up in the future, though, I'll tease some upcoming episodes. Paul Cardall, musician, LDS musician, and Heart Transplant recipient.
Cool.
He'll be on talking about that whole process. And then also Jerusha Hess, one of the writers and producers and, you know, women behind Napoleon Dynamite.
Yeah. Austin Land, right?
Austin Land, the big hit from this year's Sundance Film Festival. So that should be pretty cool. The other voice you hear besides myself, Richie T, is it's just Joni.
It's just Joni. It's just me.
That's not, she doesn't need a nickname. It's just Joni.
Believe it or not, it's just me.
Just Joni.
Yeah.
Those are my favorite things about parody songs, when the syllables don't fit into the actual place.
Yeah.
Where it's, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
I do. Where they just cram it.
Yeah. You just start da-da-da-da-da-da all in the one monotone.
Happy birthday, dear Joni, my best friend that I've ever met in the entire world. You know what I'm saying? Just the cramming it in there. That's how you know it's an amateur parody song.
Yeah. None of that from you, though. You're no amateur.
No, I'm pro.
That's right.
I can be a salt shaker like that. Boom. Woo! Parody song. Here it comes.
Bearded salt shaker.
Bearded salt shaker. I look like a leprechaun right now.
A little bit.
A little bit of the Fighting Irish. This is hilarious. Yesterday in church, because I'm kind of that odd guy in my ward.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people are nice to me because I think they think that I could be just terrible to them or something.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. I don't know why they think. I don't know why they're nice to me. But I was talking to people the other day, and they said, why the beard?
Mm-hmm.
And I stone cold sober stared at a couple of these people in the face, and I said, well, as it turns out, they're hiring a new mascot for Notre Dame. And I have put in my application to be the new mascot for the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame. And, you know, fingers crossed, I might be moving to South Bend.
And they believed you.
And they were just like, oh my gosh, yeah, that's great.
I would have believed you.
That'd be a great. So
you could totally do it.
Yes, why not? Why not, right?
Seriously.
He's just a guy dressed like a leprechaun. That's it. I could do it.
Totally.
You know, truthfully, I haven't decided why it is that I'm growing the beard. Like, there are various things. I tell people I'm doing it just because I want to test the patience of my wife. Because I don't think she cares for facial hair at all. Literally at all. But she hasn't said anything about it.
That surprises me.
So I don't know. I mean, like, she's like, she said, oh, scruffy. But, like, she still kisses me as much as she kissed me before. You know what I'm saying? So there hasn't been, like, a big, oh, I'm not kissing you until you shave your face.
She's nicer than me. I'd be like, ew, get that rat off your face before I kiss you.
It's good looking. It's not.
I don't enjoy facial hair myself.
I don't think she does either, but she hasn't said anything. So that's been one thing I've said, is just to test the patience of my wife. That's number one. The second thing is, there's a band called The Lumineers.
Mm-hmm.
I look exactly like the percussionist from the band The Lumineers. And his beard is a little longer than the beard I have now, but he also has no mustache. And so part of that, too, has been like, hey, I'm going to make myself look like this guy. That's been another excuse for it. But really, I think I just got bored of not having something unusual about me. Because sure. I haven't grown my hair out for a long time.
I get it.
I wanted to be different.
You are different all the time.
You are beautiful, no matter what they say. What's new with you?
What is new with me?
Now Survivor's not on. How do you live?
I know. Seriously, my poor TV is in such disuse now. I
will be back to you in the fall.
That's right. I cry at each finale. Oh, no. No cliffhanger. No, we're really busy. We're redoing a bunch of stuff in our house. We had a big yard sale. And
like a remodel?
Yeah, we're doing our kitchen. I got
like
a guy.
Like a real remodel?
No, it's like mostly cosmetic stuff. I have a guy taking off all my cabinet doors today, and we're going to get new cabinet doors.
Okay, so that's kind of a big
deal.
Yeah,
we got granite countertops a couple weeks ago. So
that's great.
We're doing some stuff.
Yeah. Older house?
89. It was built in 89.
Okay, so time for a little...
Yeah, my countertops were lavender formica.
Yeah?
Yeah. So we moved in the house 5 years ago, and the idea was that was the first thing we were going to change. Uh-huh. But then I got pregnant right after, and I said, if this house doesn't have central air, I'm going to kill somebody. So that was what we used that money for instead. And then it just took us this time to
save up and get it.
Save up again, yeah.
What color of granite did you get?
Well, it's called Giallo Santo.
Oh, I love it.
It just sounds good.
I love the Giallo Santo.
It's like a tan with veins of brown and black.
Yeah, veins of brown and black.
Yeah.
Yeah, Giallo Santo.
Yeah.
Hello, my name is Giallo Santo. I've come to reside on your countertops. Yeah. You'll never look at your countertops again.
I won't.
You'll be in there cooking dinner. Hello, Johnny.
Give him a little caress. Hello.
Just Johnny. I love it when I love it when you put your lettuce upon me. I don't know.
I love it.
That's great.
Yeah, we're excited.
Hallelujah, we don't have to do that stuff. I am at the point now where I am done doing things for my house. And I'm not really done doing them. I just don't want to do them
You're
anymore.
Mentally done doing
yeah.
them.
Yeah, because now that the lawn is done and I had to put in new sprinkler valves and all this stuff, I'm just like, you know what? I just want to come home and be like, I like this place. Hello, place that requires no attention from me today. How are you?
Yeah.
And just enjoy that house.
Yeah, that's how I feel about my body right now.
Right? Right? The same thing. Yeah. It's like, why can't you just be 20 pounds less of you?
I'm like, oh, we worked so hard for so long. Can we just
Can we go
be
back
cool
to that?
For a little bit?
Yeah. No, that's another bad part. But I'm going out of town this weekend.
Awesome. Where are you headed?
Oh, I've got to tell this story. Oh, I'll tell it somewhere else. Maybe okay. I'll blog about it. But I went to the temple.
Oh, good. I do want to hear about that.
But I'm going. Oh, so let me share this. So I am going to Las Vegas.
Okay.
With kids. So we'll see how that goes.
With kids meaning kid and friends?
Yeah, kid and friend. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
15-year-old in Vegas. My wife got roped into a what do you call it? Timeshare presentation.
Oh yeah. Done those. Yeah.
Yeah. Good. Did you have a good experience with it? Because they give you tons of free stuff.
Sure. And you just got to go into it knowing that you're going to be having a chunk of time with heavy pressure sales, and you just have to turn on your no voice and just say, nope, 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 nope. And they're going to say, oh, but we could do it for this. Oh, but what about this? Nope, nope. Unless you want it, then you can say yes.
But I'm nervous about it. Because my wife,
it's pretty high
pressure
sales.
Who has a hard time saying no, that got us into this. Is going to be there because you have to be husband and wife in this thing.
Oh.
And so it's going to be one of those things where I'm afraid I'm going to have to be like, no, we said no, we can't afford to do this, no. And it'll be like, bah, why can't we? Like, I'm afraid I'm going to have to be that guy.
My husband and I have to have the talk beforehand, like, stay strong, baby, just hold on. No, no means no.
Okay. So I got to have that conversation first.
Yes.
Okay, done. Coming up in the second and third block of the Culture Hall, we talk all about rape recovery.
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it. Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
Time for the second block of the Cultural Hall here, and we're visiting with Meredith Maynor. It's me and Lindsay. Hey, Lindsay.
Hi, how
are
you?
Good to have you back.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
You look tan.
I got a spray tan this weekend.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Spraying it on.
Absolutely.
No cancer for you.
No cancer and still bronze.
Don't let the rain get you.
I know. It'll run. Yeah.
That will be the only laughter for the next 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Today we're going to talk with Meredith Maynor about rape and everything about rape. And recovery and prevention and okay,
it's
so
heavy.
Here we go.
Yeah,
it's going to be a heavy one. But I invited Meredith on after I visited with her boss through my day job. I feel really passionately about people needing to be informed about rape and stopping it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why Meredith is here. Thank you for joining us, Meredith.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. You're from California, correct? Born
yes.
and raised?
Yes. So I'm from Southern California, and I'm currently a second-year MSW student at the U doing my practicum at the Rape Recovery Center.
Okay, and wait.
MSW.
So a master's in social work.
There you go. Okay.
We're not in with the lingo.
Yeah, so I'm not cool enough to know what that means.
For Lindsay, you're going to really have to dumb it down.
Yeah, you're going to have to go like fifth grade level.
All right. Okay. Sounds good.
Maybe sixth grade.
Okay, maybe sixth.
Anyway, so you work at the Rape Recovery Center here in Salt Lake City.
Yes, in Sugar House.
And before we go into everything about, you know, prevention and even just acknowledging what is rape, this is a really hard subject and you're studying it in school. What is it that motivates you to want to do this?
That's a great question. I think it is a really difficult topic, but I think it's something that is really prevalent and something that's taboo and something that we all feel the repercussions of. And for me, I've always been a feminist and have always really cared about women's issues and men's issues, but gendered issues, I guess, in general. And so I've always really been passionate about helping the vulnerable, but also spreading awareness. So this is something where I felt like I could use those passions and skills. So that's why I chose to work there this year.
Very cool. And you yourself are a member of the church?
I am a member of the LDS faith and have been since I was born. Well,
Lifer.
I guess since I got baptized. Yeah. And have a very active family. So
very active family?
Yes.
Like, is your dad a bishop? Is that what that means?
He's not, but he has been in bishoprics, and we've all been in leadership positions in the church.
Cool.
And been active, so.
Okay, let's start here. So we're talking about rape. What is rape?
Ooh, that's a heavy question. So I think there's... Okay, so rape is basically any sort of, well, according to the definition of rape in Utah,
mm-hmm.
it is any sort of a sexual activity where a penis enters a vagina
mm-hmm.
and is unconsented.
Okay.
That's different than the definition of sexual assault,
okay.
which is any sort of sexual activity that is unconsented, which includes any sort of exposure or any sort of sexual activity that is not wanted by the other person.
And is that different in Utah than the rest of the nation?
Yes. And every state has their own definition of what rape is. But that does propose some problems as far as rape only being between a male and a female, according to this definition.
Oh, yeah. That's something that, according to that definition, doesn't even address anything that would have to do with homosexuals, either male or female.
Right. And so...
So in that case, if it's a forcible sexual activity between a man and a man and a woman, it's not considered rape. It's just considered...
It's considered sodomy in some cases. And considered other things in other cases.
Yeah, just sexual.
Interesting. Hmm. Yeah, yes. I didn't know that.
Hmm. So basically, the thing that screams it to me in that is that it's unwanted, obviously. That's one part of it.
Yes.
So let's go from there. So anything that's unwanted, we can go. Let's go a broader version, as there's people that listen all over. A broader version being any unwanted sexual activity between yourself and another person.
Yes.
Is that a fair summation of rape, as you would say?
Yes. Okay. And I think what's confusing for a lot of people is they feel as though if they don't say no, it's not rape. And that's not the case, because a lot of times people are coerced into sexual activity that they don't want. And a lot of times they feel like if they don't say no, that it's not rape. Mm-hmm. So, which is not the case. Any sort of unwanted sexual activity is rape or a sexual assault.
And let's go here right away that the no never means yes. You know how they always say, oh yeah, well she said no, but she meant yes. No,
right.
When people say no, that means no.
Mm-hmm.
All right, everyone? No means no. We can, and yes. I'm sure we'll come back to that again. No, not yes, no.
No means no.
No. Perfect. So, let's get into the myth. We talked for actually quite at length before we started with the microphones on about rape prevention, talking about, let me think where I want to go with this. You were talking about how rape is very rarely about, there's very rarely stranger rape, and it's very rarely about sex.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about those things for a few minutes.
So probably the most common rape myth is that rape is about sex, and sex is the weapon used in rape, but it is about aggression and power and control. And we know these things because if we look at what's happened with the reports in Utah, there have been the oldest woman who was raped was over 80 years old.
Oh, wow.
And the youngest person raped was an infant. And so these obviously are more about using someone who's vulnerable to feel more in control for the person rather than having a sexual experience.
Sure.
And so I think if there's one thing anyone could know about rape that could help them understand it better is just that it is never about sex. It's always about power and control.
So how do we empower or give people control so that they aren't raped?
So
is there what can like
prevention?
Yeah, what can we do to prevent? Because I also want to I want to talk about some other stereotypes of why rape occurs. But what can people do to prevent being raped?
I think the best prevention we can do, because this is typically a gendered violence, although it happens to both males and females, and there are female perpetrators as well as male perpetrators, the majority of what's happening is male perpetrators on female victims. And so I think the best thing we can do is to educate people or teach men not to rape. And I think that's the biggest thing. I think we see these things around the internet that say ways that women cannot get raped. And there's all these things about going with buddies or
carry mace.
Yeah. And all these ways to protect women. But again, that's a way that we're controlling women instead of teaching people not to rape, which is another form of victim blaming. And so I think we talk about risk reduction. There are ways to reduce your risk.
And some of those things are pretty good ways. I mean, always being with someone else if you're going to go out with people you don't know, that just seems smart regardless of, a rape avoidance or anything like that. It just seems smart to not be with someone you don't know.
Yeah.
But if you're saying that the majority of rape occurs from people that the other person knows, right? So it's not stranger rape. So how do you prevent it if you know someone? I mean, it's not like you can, spray down the person with mace that you know that's sitting next to you. You know what I mean?
Right,
like, how do you prevent that?
Yeah, so I think the statistic with stranger rape, with non-stranger rape, is that 80% of rapes that take place are by someone that the victim knows. Mm-hmm. So you're right about that. And I think that the problem with talking about ways that you can prevent it by like being in buddy systems or stuff like that is that then if the person didn't or wasn't with a buddy, then they feel like somehow they could have done something more.
Oh, I shouldn't have never done this. I should have worn this. I shouldn't have been alone.
Right. And so it's another, that can also be a form of victim blaming, when really a lot of what we need to focus on is how to help perpetrators feel empowered in different ways and not find power over being aggressive towards vulnerable populations.
So how do we do that? Because to me, I think I feel like we just turn the microphone on and say, hey, dudes, chicks, don't rape people.
Yeah.
But that probably isn't effective enough. Yeah. To, I mean, you would hope that that could be a blanket thing and people go, oh, you know, I was thinking about it. And then Richie said that I shouldn't. Probably a good idea. I probably won't do it. I mean, there's got to be more to that.
Yeah. Well, I think this is a huge question and something that requires a lot of thought. And I think a lot of what I just read an article and it was called It Takes a Village to Rape Someone. And it's this idea that we live in a rape culture. If you go listen to any rap song or any pop song, there's a lot of messages about specifically women being objectified and specifically being subservient to men. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a lot of understanding of media that we have to kind of deconstruct in order to understand how our whole culture is perpetuating these problems. But I don't know if there's any like special formula. I think that it's really important for men like yourself to get involved in these conversations and to have a voice in it and to talk about how we can see women as human. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm...
Because they are, by the way.
Oh, really? Thank you. Appreciate
you're welcome.
That.
You're welcome, ladies.
But
appreciate
the first that. The first step to any act of violence is objectifying someone. And so we see
what does that mean
that...
exactly? For if people are going, I kind of get that. What do you mean?
Just any sort of... I think the second that women are valued for their bodies or valued for looking a certain way, it's one step closer to objectification. And I think it's a spectrum. And I think we're all guilty of buying into this culture, including myself. I find myself saying things every day that I feel I've become extra sensitive to because I will only notice how a woman looks or something when I see her. And all of those things are perpetuating this idea that women are objects and that their number one value comes from how they appear and how they look and not necessarily like how they feel or how they think or seeing them as someone who's an equal and who has human qualities just as much as you do.
Yeah. I think that's a lot bigger issue than we have time to talk about.
Yeah.
Well, my question is, so we talked about how rape isn't necessarily a sexual crime. It's more about power and aggression. So do you think that men often have it in their head, just using this as the example, that men say, I'm going to rape someone today? Or do they just kind of do that act and then it's like, oh, yeah, that was rape? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, is it premeditated or...
You know, I haven't worked with perpetrators in social work, so I don't know if I can answer that for everyone, but I would say that I think most acts of violence are premeditated. Okay. I that's my personal opinion, and I don't have the statistics to back that up.
Okay.
But I think
just
that,
from what you've seen, though.
Yeah, from what I've understood. I mean, in order to get someone alone in a place where that act can happen, a lot of times there has to be some sort of premeditation going on.
Okay.
So,
what role do you think pornography plays in rape?
It's a super loaded question, too.
That's fine. I just unloaded that question. Now
yeah,
I want you to answer it.
There's a lot of controversy around whether pornography plays into rape or not. I've heard the spectrum of opinions about it.
What's your feeling?
I think pornography... I think as Mormons, sometimes we talk about pornography we talk about it in a way where like all pornography is the same.
Right.
And there's pornography that is very degrading to women. There's pornography that's very degrading to children. There's pornography that's very degrading to men. There's pornography where, and I don't personally know, but from what the discussions I've heard, is that basically, I think any sort of, again, objectification of anyone mm-hmm. will not be healthy to a person. I think any sort of idea that another person can be objectified will, yes, of course, like lead to more aggression towards human beings. Mm-hmm. But I also think there's people who will argue that perpetrators who are able to look at pornography are less likely to act out because they're able to act out in a different way using pornography. Hmm. And so I don't personally agree with that, but I do think I think any sort of objectification is going to, like I said, perpetuate this problem.
Cool. Coming up in the third block, we'll continue to talk more about rape, talk about maybe what if people have found themselves in a situation and maybe have never talked to anyone before, what they can do. Some of those kind of things coming up here in the third block of the Cultural Hall.
Sidewinder Media was named as one of Utah's top photographers by In This Week magazine and is a winner of several awards for fine art, portrait, and event photography. Sidewinder Media has been professionally photographing everything from wildlife to headshots for over 10 years. Sidewinder Media has the experience and the knowledge to capture your special occasion or portrait the way you want it. They also film and edit music or product videos and do simple ads for Facebook or websites. Email them at sidewindermedia@gmail.com or call Rusty at 801-941-5500. To book your shoot today.
Time for the third block of the Cultural Hall, where we continue to discuss about rape. Lindsay did it again in the commercial break that we took. She goes off about how this is her big personal fear and sharing all this personal, like, really moving stuff. And then the microphones come back on and she goes,
I wasn't sharing personal stuff. I just said that this topic they were talking about rape would be, it's one of my biggest fears as a woman and as a human being. It's just one of
What is it that scares it about it?
I think the, honestly, we're going to be really candid right now.
Yeah.
It's the pain of knowing that he, in this case, would be, I don't know how to put this delicately, forcing himself on me. Okay. I think that part would just be really, really difficult for me. And I don't know how I would handle that.
It's interesting because that addresses that same thing of control. Because yeah. I think it would be that I have no control over what's going on right now.
Right.
Making you ultimately really vulnerable. You talked, Meredith, about the fact that you work with the Rape Recovery Center and you do a lot with the kind of emotional side of rape and rape recovery. Let's pretend for a minute that someone is listening and for all intents and purposes, I bet someone is that, you know, feels like they were raped or wonders, you know, was I raped or did I just, you know, kind of doing that thing in their mm-hmm. head? What would you say to those people?
I would say that if it was any unwanted sexual activity, that yes, you were raped, and by legal definition, you were raped. Mm-hmm. So I think.
So now what? Now what do I do? Okay, Meredith just made it pretty clear. Now I feel like, okay, I was raped.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now I didn't say no, but I didn't say yes either, yeah. right?
And unfortunately, there's so many women who have no idea that they can label it that way. Mm-hmm. I went to the training. There's a 40-hour training you have to do in order to work at the Rape Recovery Center. And there were a couple of volunteers that were there and said, until this moment, I never realize that's what it was. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, there's a lot of repercussions to that, even if you don't label it that way in your mind. Mm-hmm. A lot of times people will feel the repercussions of experiencing such a traumatic event. And a lot of times there will be anxiety in your life that wasn't there before. There will be a lot of self-loathing that wasn't there before. There will be the repercussions even if you yourself are kind of in denial.
Yeah, a lot of what seems like really hard things, emotions to deal with, and life affecting. So now I'm hearing this, and I say, oh man, you know what? This was an experience that I had, and now the I would imagine that first step is to say to myself, okay, I was raped, but now what can I do so that I don't have to be anxious anymore, so that I don't have to be afraid, so that I don't have to be closed off.
Yeah,
all those things. What are what are my steps? What do I do?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think it's really important that whether you are ready to admit that to yourself or not, there's help for you. And in order to kind of just gain some information and education about it, you can always stop by the Rape Recovery Center. Mm-hmm. And we have a wonderful staff there of advocates, therapists, and people who do education outreach. And
that's for here in Utah. But if someone were listening, say, you know, in a different state, is there a general website that someone could go to that would guide them to someone locally? Or is there?
Yeah, there are rape recovery centers all over the U.S. And so what I would do is type in the rape recovery center and then whatever your town or state is. Mm-hmm. And something should pop up of a resource that will be near you. We also have a 24-hour crisis line.
And I bet it's 1-800. Am I right?
I believe so. You can find the number for that on our Rape Recovery Center website. And you can call that number at any time. And any of the advocates on our line can help you to find, to answer questions about anything that you're wondering, and also find rape recovery centers near you.
I'm going to Rape Recovery Center right now. RapeRecoveryCenter.com.
Yes.
It is an 801 number. It's 801-467-7273. And I'm betting that if you lived outside of the state of Utah and you called that number, that you wouldn't say, tough, you don't live in Utah, and hang right up on the person.
Right. Yes. So you can, anyone can call that number.
So this is pretty cool. Now I'm looking at the website and it talks all sorts of things about, like, sharing your experience, letting know that 1 in 3 women and 1 in 6 men in our community are survivors of sexual violence.
Yes.
That seems like a high number for men.
Yeah, it's high. And unfortunately, the sad thing is that men are a lot less likely to disclose if they have experience.
Why is that?
Again, it kind of goes back to...
because you're boys and you don't talk about stuff.
Yes. goes back to gender socialization in our culture, and men typically who have experienced this feel like they've been demasculated, and they feel like men in our culture want power. Our whole culture is based on accumulating more and more power and wealth, and that is what is correlated with your masculinity. And so if someone has taken your power away, a lot of times you don't want to reveal that to anyone, even if there are really real repercussions of it in your life.
I want to talk about some statistics. You mentioned that we should talk some statistics for Utah, which is kind of a reflective of the Mormon church,
mm-hmm.
or within the church as well. So I want to start here. Have you ever either of you guys in your church activity, had anyone during church hours talk about rape?
No.
That you can remember?
I have not.
Me
either. From the pulpit or something?
Or in a class.
I have not, no.
Nope, I have not either. Although I have gone now and talked to several different young women in the Utah area, because they will a lot of times make journals for our survivors, and then we'll educate them about different things and statistics and everything.
Why do you think it's so taboo? Because that's why it's not talked about, I would imagine.
Right.
But why do you think, I mean, where education is empowering, and we all talk about how the purpose of this life is to gain intelligence, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody knows what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. So why not?
I think it's taboo in general in the United States culture. And then on top of that, I think in highly religious cultures, we often value cleanliness, and sexuality is something that if not because it's one of the greatest sins, mm-hmm. to have sexual relations outside of a marriage between a female and male, I think a lot of times this feels really shameful. There's a lot of guilt. Mm-hmm. A lot of times people feel if they hadn't lost their virginity and then they experience sexual violence, a lot of times they feel unclean. And a lot of times they're re-victimized by, if they reach out for help, people tell them, well, you shouldn't have been wearing that. You shouldn't have gone to that party. You should have made better choices. And so a lot of times people just retreat back into themselves and don't reach out for that help. So I think that's some of the reasons why it's so taboo.
Do you see a lot of LDS patients at your, or clients you call them, at your rape recovery center?
Yeah, we see, I would say at least 50%.
And what do you feel like is the difference between how they handle the situation and maybe someone outside the faith, or is there a difference?
I think there's a lot of issues that come around experiencing trauma and spirituality. And I think a lot of times spirituality can be a huge strength for our clients in their times of trauma, and they are able to cling to compassion of the atonement and a loving savior who knows everything that they're going through. But a lot of times too, what happens is trauma will shatter spirituality. And a lot of times I'll see clients who come in and say, why did Heavenly Father let this happen to me? Mm-hmm. Or, and unfortunately I see clients who have experienced victimization from leadership roles in the church, or from family members who also hold leadership roles, and that's really confusing as an LDS person.
Wait, but he was a bishop.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, that's terrifying.
Feeling like they're speaking for God and then they're perpetrating on me. How does that all work together?
Yeah, and how do you keep your faith after something like that happens, you know?
Right. And I think it all kind of just meshes together, and it's really hard to sort through. And I think that's why therapy is really important in helping clients to work through these things. So I think that there's a lot of different ways, and it depends on the specific situation of how it happens and who the perpetrator is and how long it's been since you've told anyone and that sort of thing. But I definitely think there's unique issues to the LDS community.
So going back, someone listening kind of, you know, come to the realization that here's where it is, that the next step you would say then, it sounds like, is that they need to talk to someone, either someone at the Rape Recovery Center or... Mm-hmm. A therapist?
Yeah, so I think it's really important to know where you're at in your process. And a lot of times people don't, unless they're educated about these things, they probably won't know. So a good first step, I think, is even just calling the crisis line, mm-hmm. talking to an advocate about where you feel you're at. It's not really smart to go into trauma therapy for rape until you are to a place where you're a little bit more stable in your life. We have crisis counseling also at our agency where you can come in and kind of work on just day-to-day coping skills to help you get to a place where you're stable. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it's important to know where you're at in your process and how to get help for that specific thing. So if you are at a place where you feel you're ready to work through, then we have free services or sliding scale fees for anyone who has experienced any sort of sexual violence. We don't want money to be a barrier to helping people get access to these resources. If you do have insurance, just finding a competent therapist who knows a lot about these issues and also understands the realities of trauma and how it affects the body and the brain.
Do you know, I know LDS Family Services, which is nationwide, do they typically have people that are trained in kind of trauma therapy? Do you know anything about that?
I think so. I don't know for sure. Okay.
But that might be a place where some people could turn to within other communities, if they're not here in Salt Lake, could certainly turn to their LDS Family Services and their ward or to their stake president. But I would imagine that there would sometimes be some embarrassment kind of about
right.
that.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I didn't bring that up. But I think that's another huge thing for survivors is just the embarrassment of being violated and telling your story to people. And that's a very private and personal thing. So,
and you talked earlier about the process, like the victim knowing where they're at in the process. Is it like the steps of grieving where there's denial and then there's anger and whatever the other steps are? Is there a clear cut process like you were saying?
I think I've actually done grief counseling as well. So I think that's a good parallel. However, even with the steps of grieving, it's a very dynamic process. And so you could feel denial and sadness at the same time. There's not really like a linear process that anyone goes
through.
Wouldn't
that be great if it was like, and now I'm on to step three. I am so close to getting better.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I just wondered. I don't know much about this step.
No, yeah, and that makes a lot of sense. I think the process is, the most important process is finding empowerment. Because like we talked about, people have lost a sense of control and power. And so a lot of therapy that we do with survivors revolves around helping them to reclaim and refine their power and to do things in their life that makes them feel like they're in control again and like they are able to make decisions themselves and trust themselves again, so that they, and like listening to their inner voice and being able to be true to that voice, and just steps of really finding that empowerment, because I think that's ultimately what trauma is. It's losing a sense of control and power. And this is really the ultimate act of, if you can't control your body, what can you control?
Right.
And so this is really a intense traumatic experience. So in order for them to go through that process, I think so much of it is being able to find empowerment again.
I think another element of this whole thing is, you know, sometimes people, as we've talked about, like blaming or victim blaming or blaming themselves, you know, people feel so terrible that, you know, this has happened to them. And I think that, you know, you probably wouldn't get this aspect of it. And you hinted towards it earlier in just like a secular kind of thing. But, you know, the idea that, you know, the atonement of Christ, can make it. You'll be good.
Yeah.
You know, and the other thing too is that it wasn't your fault. Mm-hmm. I think that that's a huge aspect of it, and we've said it multiple times already, but I think it is worth reiterating to say, you know what, this was someone else's agency that they chose to do this to you.
Mm-hmm.
It's not your fault, and that, you know, through Christ you can make it through this.
But sometimes I feel like even the atonement, and maybe this is a different topic, but like it's so much easier said than done. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's so easy to say, oh, Christ covered that. But when you're feeling alone and feeling victimized and, you know, it's like, how do you do that? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. I just feel like it probably, you see that a lot in your clients, is that, you know, it's easy for them to sit there and say, like, I feel this way, but to actually have that cover and take care of things. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, and I think, like I said earlier too, a lot of times you become, trauma has a real effect on our brains and our bodies. And personally, I feel like we talk about the soul, and the soul is our spirit and our body. And so when our body has been violated in such an intense way, and we know that through our church, that sex is such a sacred thing. And so when someone experiences something so violating to their spirit, I think it's really difficult to come back in touch with it. And I think a lot of times people experience like a disconnection from themselves and from their bodies. And a lot of our clients will say they can't even feel their bodies anymore. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times they need to do certain therapies like yoga or different practices where they can bridge the gap between their minds and their bodies. And so it's really important to, I think, to seek both secular and spiritual help. And I think sometimes almost we have to do the therapy in a secular form before we can get back in touch with our spiritual selves and be able to really tap into the realities of the atonement. Because I think a lot of my clients, as I've talked to them, feel a disconnect from spirituality in general.
You spoke earlier that you have gone and spoken to young women's groups about this. What kind of things do you tell them?
We kind of have a curriculum, and then we kind of just, I tweak it and add some quotes from like general authorities and stuff. But we just talk mostly about statistics and like boundaries and knowing what healthy boundaries are with
people.
What
is a healthy boundary?
Well, I think it's different for everyone, but I think a lot of times as LDS women, we're taught to be really nice to everyone and to be meek.
Oh, you don't want
to
say no. I don't want to be, right. That might hurt his feelings. Mm-hmm.
And we think of being Christ-like as being, turning the other cheek and almost sometimes being a doormat. And the reality is that those things perpetuate violence if you're not careful. So I'm not saying it's not great to be kind to people or good to be obedient or stuff like that. But I am saying that it's important to be able to say no when you feel like something's wrong. Mm-hmm. And something that I teach like my sisters or anyone who are around.
Sisters are younger.
Yeah, I have younger and older sisters, but any women that I come into contact with is to listen to yourself and listen to your body. And a lot of times our bodies know when we're in danger before, like cognitively, we understand we're in danger. And so if you have that gut feeling about someone, pay attention and don't dismiss it and don't say like, oh, don't feel guilty for feeling like that guy is a total creep. Like mm-hmm. he most likely is if your body's telling you he is.
Right.
So, and I think a lot of times like in ward situations too, we feel like we're not supposed to judge anyone and we're not supposed to think anyone's bad. But, and the reality is that we need to be able to make righteous judgments. And I think it's really important to protect ourselves, no matter who we are. And so I think a lot of that has to do with having healthy boundaries and really understanding like, this is how I'm going to protect myself. I'm going to say no when I can tell I don't feel good around someone. I'm going to listen to myself and to what I feel is right.
Well, that's a good point too, that we always talk in the church about not judging other people by the way they look or anything like that. But if you're in a situation where you, like, there's a perfectly good looking person or normal looking person, whatever that may be, and mm-hmm. you feel like you're in a terrible situation, like it's okay to get out of that situation, even though you may be judging that person unfairly.
Yes,
you know what I mean?
Absolutely. I would say, and obviously this is coming from someone who's worked with a lot of trauma, so my perception may be a little bit skewed, but I would say that it is so crucial to pay attention to that and to realize that perpetrators are in all classes of our culture. It's not.
No, it's just this type of person.
Yeah. Perpetrators are a lot of times good looking. Ooh. They're a lot of times charming.
And I don't want people to go out and just fear everybody. Like, that's,
right.
I don't think that's what you're saying either. But
right.
And I think it is important to just, yeah, be aware.
Exactly. Yeah. And just be aware that, and I think it's sometimes hard when you haven't, a lot of times people don't talk about this, so people don't realize like how prevalent it is, but it is prevalent enough that I think it's important for all of us to be aware, like you're saying, and to unfortunately see the world in a way where we do have to protect ourselves.
But he's a return missionary.
Yeah. It
doesn't always matter.
Unfortunately.
But she's a return missionary. Let's throw some women in here too.
Yeah.
You would throw the women under the bus.
Yeah, I think a lot of times in church we feel like there's certain like safety guards, like if certain people have certain callings or look a certain way or are like super nice, then that means that they could never perpetrate. And
that's wrong.
Yeah. And that is
and
wrong.
You've seen it? You've
yes,
seen it?
I've seen it over and over again. And unfortunately, a lot of what I've seen happen too is a lot of, we'll use a woman again, but a lot of women will then go to their bishops. It will be like their boyfriend and they'll be coerced into sex when they didn't want it. And they'll freeze and they'll have all the responses of trauma that are normal. And then they'll go to the bishop and repent because they feel like it wasn't rape and they did something wrong. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, this happens too often. And
I would think that would be pretty prevalent. Actually, that scenario, certainly. Where the guy, oh, come on, let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it ends up happening.
Right. And then it's really sad because it's very, the trauma is compounded because now they were a victim. Someone's re-victimizing them, not intentionally. And then there's so much to work through as someone who's experienced that. And so I think actually something hopeful is that the BYU Women's Center is working on a curriculum right now for stake presidents and bishops to understand a little bit more about this these issues so that they can help people who come into them in ways that are not re-victimizing.
Oh, that's good because, yeah, like someone might go in there and feel like they need to repent when really they might not need to, you know, right. They could save themselves all that guilt.
Right. Exactly.
I think it's a fascinating thing too, because I think that, like dudes who are thinking, and I love using the phrase chicks and dudes, sorry, so forgive me, but, these dudes who are thinking about how, you know, maybe they were coercive in mm-hmm. being able to achieve sexual interaction with them. I don't think that those guys necessarily think of it as rape.
Yeah,
I think
that's that,
I think a lot of the,
earlier.
I think a lot of the time it's, they're just like, well, no, it's something that it just happened. No, I'm not rape. I'm not that guy.
Yeah.
I'm not, you know, hiding in the bushes, jump out and spook you, you know, rape.
Forcing you down.
But
and,
going but going to where we very first started was it's any unwanted sexual activity that's put upon
me. Right. Mm-hmm. Well, and I think.
Because I'm not a rapist. But you know what I'm saying?
Right.
That guy, yeah.
Right. And I think, I think that that's a definite issue. I think, though, what's important is to just be really respectful of whoever, whether it's male or female, to be really respectful of what people want or need in situations. And as a woman, being able to say, no, this isn't right. I don't want this. And I think, I mean, again, that doesn't mean they're going to stop. And a lot of times people won't listen to you saying that. And that's when women just have to do, or men have to do whatever they can do to get through the situation safely. Mm-hmm. I think that that happens a lot. And unfortunately, I think there's a lot of cultural things that play into that. And I think there's a lot of understanding that in, I hear things all the time in church, like even how we talk about modesty is mm-hmm. very much like, oh, you dress modestly so that men don't lust after you. And the reality is that that's also perpetuating rape myths because men, I personally believe that men who, especially men who hold the priesthood, have the ability to control themselves.
Right. And, the other frustrating part, besides perpetuating the behaviors as far as rape goes, is it also makes men sound like we're super dumb.
Exactly.
Where it's
well,
like,
it is hardwired in your brain.
I can't think when there's the woman's shoulder. You know, it's like, no. I can make choices as to whether or not I look at that or lust after something. It's not, oh, there's that. Can't stop. Yes. Wish I could stop right now.
But you're more inclined to
don't judge
go
me.
That way.
I'm not more inclined.
I'm not saying you. I'm
people
saying
in
your
general
species
have the,
in general.
Yeah, and I still think how sad is it that we talk about men that way? Because I believe that the men in my life that I have around me are able to control their desires and to be respectful, and especially the men I know who hold the priesthood and who have spirituality as a big part of their lives.
And I think when you say, I know you were just kind of joking, but the hardwiring thing, I think that becomes an excuse where it's like, oh, well, it must be part of me, so it's kind of all right for me to have these lust things. And it's not.
Yeah.
It's not okay.
Well, no, I
men
agree.
Men are different than women, and I know where you're coming from. But I think, I mean, that's the kind of dangerous discussion about what we've kind of been talking about all in general is empowering each person to say, I can make choices.
Right.
I am not a dude that, you know, I have to rape someone if someone wears something with cleavage, you know, oh, couldn't stop, sorry. And women, you know, being empowered to say things like no, for example.
Yeah.
Meredith, what have we missed? Have we missed anything?
I think something important to realize too is we've been focusing on male perpetrators and female victims, but unfortunately this is something that happens with male perpetrators on male victims, female perpetrators on male victims, and then also female on female. So I think it's unfortunately there's a lot of work to be done around all of those situations and experiences, because I think a lot of those voices are silenced and people, rape is hard enough to talk about, and then to talk about it in a way, if you're a male and you've experienced a female sexually assaulting you, as a grown male especially, that's something that people, I think almost in our culture, that's like,
oh, you got beat by a girl?
That yeah.
Kind of same kind of thing.
Right. It's, and so unfortunately we have a lot of male victims who end up suffering in silence and don't even realize that what's happened to them is really horrific and traumatic. And so I think that it's important to realize that all of these things take place and that there is help for all of those situations. We actually see male and female clients at the Rape Recovery Center. And know a lot about all of those situations. So it's not just for females.
Another interesting thing, too, that I would think that would apply with both same gender rapes would be, I mean, I'm sure that it exists within the homosexual community where,
yes,
you know, there's men out on a date and that rape occurs, or women out on a date and that occurs in that situation as well. But going a different step away from that is like if it is a man or a young man and he is raped by an older man, you know,
yes,
because then it becomes an issue of not only the control that's lost by that person, but then it's like, oh, well, you know, these physiological things happened when this went on.
Right.
So am I gay? Does that make me gay? And then it's all an entirely different avenue of questions going, well, wait,
right,
what about all this? And similar for the women, too. I'm not leaving that
right,
exclusively for the men, but such a large issue in that respect.
Yeah, and I think something to understand as well is that a lot of times we think that most perpetrators who perpetrate on younger males who are males are homosexual, which is not true. Most perpetrators are heterosexual that are perpetrating on young boys or boys in general.
Because it's not about sex, it's about control.
Right, exactly.
Meredith, do you have a calling in your ward right now?
I am the new member,
greeter,
educator.
Person?
Well, I don't know what the exact title is. I'm just like the new member welcomer because we have new members every week, so I have to
You're
go.
In a singles
I get
ward?
To go meet them all. No, I'm in the Capitol Hill. I live up on Capitol Hill.
Oh,
so.
Cool. And if you could pick a calling for yourself, either one that exists or one that you made up, what would your calling be?
Like on a ward level?
Doesn't matter.
Or
doesn't matter.
She's a feminist. She's going to say she wants to be the bishop.
I know. So you could pick whatever you want it to be. And you could make up something too if you feel like it's like, this doesn't exist, but wouldn't it be awesome if there was a, and
yeah,
that's what I would be.
That's
doesn't
an
matter.
Interesting question. I think just speaking right now in my life, what I'm really passionate about is helping spread awareness about these issues, especially I think there's just a huge wound in the LDS community right now. I think that most people don't feel like they have a voice in the LDS community who experience things like this. I think a lot of people feel like there's just so much misunderstanding, and that makes me so sad because I feel like church is supposed to be a place where we heal. And I think in our baptismal covenants, we make a covenant that we mourn with those that mourn. And I think we can't mourn with those that mourn if we don't know they're mourning.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would say I would love to spread more awareness about this, even if it was just in locally, like I said, with the curriculum that's happening, I think it's really, really important to empower leadership to feel like they know how to deal with this and really help our community heal from this wound. So,
well, I think you if you had a calling such as this, you could really help people stay in the church because
right,
you could separate the fact, like knowing the beliefs and the standards of the LDS church, you could separate that from the trauma that they're experiencing.
Right.
And like you said before, the spiritual versus the secular trauma that they're experiencing. So
yeah,
you're doing a good work, girl. Keep it up.
Thank you.
What's your favorite part of your faith?
I think my favorite part of my faith is the atonement And as a therapist, I feel like I get to see people heal every day. And it's something that's neat about our church is comparing all the ideas about therapies that are already out there. A lot of things, I think the church is one of the best coping skills we have. And I think it's life is just really hard. And it's beautiful that our faith is able to make meaning out of the hardships in our life. I love that we believe in progression and that everything we experience can be so that we can become more godlike. And so, but I think the most crucial aspect of that is being able to heal from the difficulties in our life and being able to rise above them. And I think that's where the atonement comes in. And so I think being able to believe that we have people on the other side of the veil who are cheering us on and who care about us and believing that we have someone who completely understands us and knows our intentions and understands rape culture and understands the oppression and the things that are happening in the world and who wants us to rise above that and to find peace within ourselves. Those things are all things that we try to mimic in therapy through different modalities and different ways. But as an LDS person, we have those coping skills and really believe that those are real aspects of our lives. And so that's probably my favorite thing currently, just that we have all these abilities to deal with really hard things and make meaning out of them.
We hope that this podcast has nourished and strengthened your body.
And that when the time comes, you can travel home in safety.
And if you weren't healthy enough to listen this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen next week. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you.
On the back row.
Of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat. On the back row. We really gotta go on the Cultural Hall show.